Welcome to LSE Limelight from the Beaver Sound, where we unfold the best stories from students around LSE, with me, Beatriz Silva. Today we are speaking with Eileen Bagbo, a third-year international relations student who wrote an article on anti-racist student occupation movements in the UK. Eileen, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Especially today in the midst of a global pandemic. So first of all, congratulations on having a piece of your own work published in Galdem.
Oh, thank you.
Really impressive. Okay, so to start off, there is no one more qualified to explain to our listeners what this article is about than the author herself. So could you give us a brief overview of what your article is covering?
Yeah, sure. So my article looks at student occupations, particularly ones that focus on anti-racism from 1960s, from the 1960s till now, and it really looks at particular case studies from LSE's movements to now, with Goldsmiths and Warwick, but also just features a lot of different student movements.
Right, brilliant. And what led you to write this article in the first place? Did you like sit down and say, okay, I need to write an article about something? Or did you feel as though you wanted to write specifically on this topic?
So this interest in student occupations really came from discussions that I was having with different friends that were involved in different student occupations, from like the Goldsmiths anti-racism one to the Warwick one more recently. And I was just really interested in the parallels between what they were telling me. And I thought it'd be really interesting to look into what exactly is a student movement and what exactly does it achieve? Why do students decide to use occupations as a form of protest?
All right. So throughout the article, as you said, you explore student occupation movements from the 1960s all the way to today. What would you say unites these students, regardless of whether they were protesting in the 1960s or today in 2020?
Yeah, so I think the thing that unites all the students that were protesting is just the fact that for them, racism is everywhere. Racism doesn't necessarily stop, and there are different nuances and ways in which racism can affect them in their respective institutions. So from the more sort of explicit racism that was involved in the 1960s with apartheid, and the 1980s with the rise of like the British National Party, to now in terms of having less funding for BME students and students from Palestine as well, like I think that's what unites them.
Very interesting. And in the article, not trying to spoil too much, you say that in 1969, 40% of all LSE students were involved in the protests, and that the school was closed for 25 days. I was wondering, why do you think it is the student body and generally young people who care enough about these issues and decide to take action?
I think because university as a place of learning teaches you to be really critical, and for the students, they have the access to the resources, they have people that are really influential around them that can actually make real change. So it's about students critically engaging with the conditions around both their higher education institutions but the conditions within the wider society. So with Fridays for Future, it's not just about students, you know, protesting and taking a day off school. It's about students saying that this is something that is going to affect us in a way that you haven't thought about before. And I think that's a very necessary and interesting voice to bring to the climate change discussion. But even going back to the article in terms of anti-racism student movements, these movements and these occupations again lend a very critical and a very nuanced angle to what is happening on campus. So for many of us, we will go through our higher education without actually knowing that funding for a specific group of students is being cut, or that there are these conditions that the university is imposing that disproportionately affect BME students in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so student movements really shed a light on that.
Yeah, certainly. Now focusing a little bit on the process of writing. First of all, how did you obtain testimonies and, you know, first-person accounts from students? And were people receptive and open to talking to you?
Oh my goodness. So I first started out just like looking through the archives and just trying to get as much information as possible. But actually emailing people is not the best way to reach them or to engage them at all.
Okay.
But rather I found that like using social media, so mainly Twitter,
mm-hmm.
was like the best way to reach as many people as possible. And what I found is that people are really receptive to you and really want to talk about their experiences,
mm-hmm.
especially student protesters currently. But those sort of in the 60s and the 80s, they were a bit harder to reach just because mm-hmm. they're a lot older, so they don't necessarily use social media.
Yeah.
Or they are just really busy, so it would have to be sort of me going out of my way to meet them halfway and just to like chat with them. So it was a lot of dedication and a lot of charm.
Such hard work.
Yeah.
Okay. And after speaking to these people and having and reaching out to them and actually being able to listen to them, what struck you as the biggest challenges facing, especially anti-racist student movements?
I think biggest challenge that they faced, that most of these movements faced, was actually just getting people to understand what they were fighting for. So I think when you say anti-racism, the first response from a majority of people is like, ugh, what now? What again?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But actually trying to get people to understand the nuances of what they were fighting for and to also then act in solidarity with them was another challenge. And this came from, you know, having allies and where they should be positioned. Should they necessarily be at the forefront of the movement, or should they have like roles that are in the background, especially as like anti-racist movements could actually get really violent. So
mm-hmm.
if you're dealing with, you know, security or the police, like it is a very violent state to have sort of a BME protester at the forefront dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
So what really struck me is that a lot of these occupations used allies and those that were willing and able to fight for them to have these conversations, to negotiate with different sort of securities and police members. But at the same time, just having to balance being in occupation, especially with Goldsmiths for 136 days, mm-hmm. with still being a student. So, you know, you're away from lectures, classes for 136 days. You may not even go to work. You're probably not going to be around your family.
Yeah.
That takes a toll on, like, your mental health, but just on everything, you know. And I think that's, like, one of the biggest challenges that they all had, is just having to balance being a protester but also being a student at the same time.
That is so admirable. And I'm happy that you talked about ally involvement, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people will feel the same as me, which is, as a white person, you never know how can I support while at the same time not stealing the spotlight and making sure that the main issue is still being addressed and that's the focus of the conversation.
Yeah.
And so personally, what do you feel you learned in the process of writing this article?
So what I personally learned from this article is actually just how brave student activists are. I think there is a lot of like selflessness that you need to put yourself on the front line, especially as a student of colour, in order to achieve something. I think in particular, occupations aren't very easy. There are spaces, you're occupying a space that you have deemed to be hostile to you. And usually this involves like run-ins with different securities or just like law enforcement. And I think as a person of color, as a student of color, that can be quite terrifying. So I think just their bravery, but also just how to actually talk about different hostile environments, especially within universities. I think that's something that we don't necessarily talk about as much, but I think what I learned from writing this article is that there needs to be greater discussion about how different people are impacted by different policies in the universities.
Right, so to finish off, some people can argue that since the 1960s, we have progressed a lot already, that mentalities have changed in matters such as racism. Would you say that student movements are as important and necessary today as they were 50 years ago?
100%. I do think that student movements have always played an integral part in shaping not only the environment around universities, but also just society as a whole. So I think like student movements are always going to be useful even 20, 50 years from now. I do think that whilst it is, we should celebrate the fact that there has been so much progress, especially on campus, that this is down to the work that like student activists have done. And the point of still having student movements is building on that, because there are always going to be nuances, especially within anti-racist occupations and anti-racist movements, that you cannot have predicted in the 1960s. So I think that student movements, student occupations are always going to be useful, because we're always, until we have a situation in which universities stop treating students as, you know, dispensable and as homogenous, and rather start listening and paying attention to the needs of every individual student, whether it be students of color, whether it be disabled students, LGBT students. Until we have that reality, student movements are always going to be useful.
For sure. All right. Thank you so much for coming, Eileen. We have reached the end of our interview. For our listeners, do read Eileen's article. The link to the article will be on the description of the podcast, so check it out. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. The interviewee was Eileen Bagbo, and we were talking about an article she wrote on anti-racist student occupation movements in the UK. The fantastic music is by Ashley Lyo-Mussing, and I have been your host, Beatrice Silva.